Okay, today we're speaking with Queensryche lead singer Jeff Tate, and of course, Jeff, you have a new album out called Frequency Unknown, and of course, as most people know, there's currently two versions of Queensryche. You want to talk a little bit about your new album?
Yeah, sure. What do you want to know?
Well, specifically, I guess first thing I'd like to ask is, the other singer, Todd, from the other Queensryche, he's been going online saying that, like, I read something just yesterday online saying, Jeff's album is, like, basically an all-star album, and basically when I put on the album, it sounds like Queensryche to me. So do you want to explain, I guess, to the audience why you got, like, a bunch of different musicians on the album? Well, I guess what I'm asking is, a lot of these guys are, like, name guys, like Rudy Sarzo and Simon Wright, and when I listen to the album, it sounds like a Queensryche album to me, but was it just easier to record the album that way rather than trying to get a set band together?
Four of us got together to write the record. Jason Slater, who I've worked with for many years in songwriting mode and also production mode, and Randy Gain, my longtime writing partner, Lucas Rossi, and myself. The four of us got together, and we wrote all the songs, and upon finishing the writing, we thought it would be very cool to incorporate a lot of different players on the songs, such as a different, solo guitar player on each track. Wouldn't that be kind of fun? So as we started, calling people up and seeing if they were, available and are interested, we got a lot of, interest in it from different people, saying, yeah, I'd love to be part of it. And that kind of led us to utilizing different players on each song, such as Rudy getting involved on bass. And we had a number of different drummers come in, Simon Wright for one, Paul Bostaff on another one. And just started liking this idea of having different people come in and interpret the music. And it was really a fun record to make. Just very enjoyable to work with these great, awesome players and, participate in the energy that they brought into, the project was something very special to be part of that. And I'm very grateful for everyone's involvement. And I think all of us had an amazing time doing it. And to me, that's, kind of where my head is at these days is, I want to play with really great players, and I want to play with people that are enthusiastic about playing music, who have ideas, who have, the ability to work well with others, and, have a creative, positive experience.
Yeah, and, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I mean, as long as, what you deliver is, a quality album, which to me, there are also a lot of complaints about, the quality as far as the mixing of the album, but to me it sounded pretty good. Why do you think there's been so much controversy over the sound?
Well, I think the controversy is sort of a false controversy, really. I think that there's a small, very concentrated group of people who are spending a lot of time on the internet, posing as a number of different people, with multiple internet accounts, having conversations with themselves and trying to paint, a very negative picture that is happening because we're in a lawsuit. And, it's in my opinion, a complete waste of time because the lawsuit has nothing to do with anything other
Yeah, and you know, that's what I was going to ask, you know, going into, like, especially recording the album, you know, this was released under the Queensryche name, of course, but it must have been a lot of pressure, being that all the previous times you went in, you know, you had other guys, you know, as far as to write with and to create. This was all kind of put on your shoulders, even though you had other guys you wrote with. What was that like for you, you know?
Oh, it's always been on my shoulders. Yeah. So I'm pretty used to that. The great thing about this project was that I got to work at my own pace. You know, I didn't have to wait around for, you know, weeks and months while people got themselves together enough to make it to the recording session or that kind of thing, you know. I worked at my pace with people that I wanted to work with, who I found to be inspiring. So my goal is to put out a record every 6 months, you know. Right. I would love that, and I think music and art is something that should be immediate. You know, I want to talk about things that are relative to what's happening in the world right now. I want to be part of the debate, you know, of social issues and things like that. And you can't really be a part of that if it takes you 2 or 3 years to put out a record, you know.
Yeah, and, you know, and talk about, you know, a little publicity, like you said, you know, like you'd rather be having people talking about you and not talking about you. Another interesting thing that recently went on is, you know, all these people complain about the mixing of the album, and then you had some kind of online contest where you offered somebody, I believe, whoever won the worst video rant, you're going to give them 2 tickets and a copy of the album. And I thought that was kind of a great way to kind of roll with the punches and, you know, showed... what a great sense of humor you had.
Yeah, it was kind of a funny contest, you know.
And the funny...
Watching all these people rant about, you know, what they thought they could do better on my record.
and to me, the funny thing about it is, you know, they're trying to... Sure. The funny thing to me about it was they're trying to insult you, and yet the prize you're offering up is, you know, 2 free tickets to one of your shows or, you know, and a copy of the album, and... the very album they're complaining about, you know, yet they want to come see you. So it's kind of, again, kind of a laugh.
Yeah. Well, you caught that, huh?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, the whole thing was just, an exercise in, you know, basically flushing out the trolls.
Yeah.
You know, if you're gonna spout some opinion about something, you know, please, for God's sakes, make it an intelligent statement. You know, saying something sucks is not saying anything. It's just, well, I take that back. The thing that you're saying when you say something sucks is you're showing what an idiot you are.
Yeah.
Absolutely idiotic statement. I mean, a sixth grader says stuff like that, you know? So, you know, if you're going to critique art, have some background, have some history, you know? Most people wouldn't even put themselves in the position to be an art critic, you know, because it's a futile endeavor. Absolutely futile. How do you critique art? You don't. There is no good art. There is no bad art. There just is.
I mean, it's all subjective.
It's all subjective to one's own opinion. And your opinion comes from your background and your own personal history, your life history, your education, you know, all these things constitute one's and contribute to one's opinion. So, you know, if the sum total of your opinion is, this sucks, well, that doesn't say anything to me, other than next.
Especially without really listening to the whole album. I mean, I think one thing you got going for you, Jeff, too, is, you know, you have a voice that's sang these songs all these years, whereas I'm not even going to say if I think the other band's album is going to suck or not, because for a simple fact, I haven't heard it yet. But again, they've done a couple of one-off shows, and they've been getting some pretty rave reviews themselves, and maybe they'll put out a pretty good album. But at the same time, like I said, you're the original voice. You're the guy that sang and wrote most of these songs. And the new guy they got, you know, as good of a singer as he might be, he sounds nothing like Jeff Tate. And you've got a little, you've got a little touring now under your belt where, like you said, practically all your shows are selling out. They've done a couple one-off club shows. So who's to say when they start their arena tour that they're going to be successful? Maybe not, but, you know, that has yet to be seen.
Well, you know, thank you for that, Jason. I don't try to hold anybody back from being successful.
Yeah.
You know, but really doing happy with what they're doing. And I hope those guys are happy doing what they're doing. And I hope they continue on and have very happy lives. I just particularly don't want to be part of their life anymore. And I'm very, very happy in the position I'm in right now. And I feel so free of a burden that's been, you know, it's just been suffocating me for years. And, you know, I'm glad it's over. I'm glad we're moving on. And I don't hold anything against them, you know. I'm happy for them. I hope they have a lot of success and be very happy with their lives.
Yeah, you know, let me ask you, now, that's one thing I kind of respected about you and the band all these years is, I mean, until, you know, the last year, it seemed like you guys were one of the few bands that it got longer, that there wasn't a lot of drama, or did you guys just keep it pretty well under wraps for all these years?
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't think it does anybody any good to sit there and air your dirty laundry or your disagreements or your arguments. You know, I always thought it was a much better position to, you know, show that there was, you know, band unity and that kind of thing, and to keep our differences, you know, amongst ourselves. You know, I've never been one to sort of air dirty laundry out in public, and I am, you know, very regretful that this whole thing unraveled the way it did. You know, I was always the one that was shouting, please, let's keep this to ourselves, let's settle our differences, and let's settle the corporate disputes so we can move on with our lives, you know. And unfortunately, that didn't happen that way, and so now you have two versions of Queensryche operating as Queensryche until November, and hopefully this whole thing will be done and over, and we can
move on. And, you know, let me ask you, even like as I'm sitting here talking to you, and I've heard other interviews you've recently done, where, you know, you're not really bad-mouthing these guys, where it seems like they're throwing more negativity towards you, you know, even some of the guys and even their new singer. I mean, one of the things I heard of a new singer say recently in regards to your album cover was, you know, he called his album Frequency Unknown. They got the F-U ring. That's his way of saying, you know, fuck Queensryche, or fuck, you know, his ex-bandmates. And I almost had to laugh at that again because I thought, well, wow, you know, this guy's really reaching. He's really trying to think of some stuff. I never would have even thought about that, you know?
Well, I think he probably has to have something to say.
Yeah.
And something to justify his actions, you know? I've never heard him sing. I don't know anything about him. I don't really pay attention to what they're doing.
And I can't really say one or the other, because I can honestly say I've heard his name. I've heard the name of his band, but he came from Crimson Glory. They're really much heavier than Queensryche, but I could probably name more Queensryche songs. I don't even think I can name a Crimson Glory song, and that's not any me saying anything negative about it. It's just a fact, and I guess the point I'm trying to make is, you know, this is a great new gig for him because, you know, no matter what, it's put in his, you know, he's getting a bigger name being in Queensryche, singing your songs. Are you kind of interested to hear, you know, this guy's versions of your songs?
Absolutely not interested at all.
Yeah.
Absolutely not.
And so let me ask you, Jeff, you know, I like your idea. It's almost kind of like what David Coverdale did for years with, you know, Whitesnake bringing different talented musicians. I know when the tour was first announced, you said that you were going to have, like, Rudy and his brother Robert and, of course, Simon Wright. He's very busy with the Dio Disciples. So if you decide you're going to kind of just try to work it around everybody's schedule, if you need to bring in different guys to on tour, then that's what you're going to do?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I look at this whole thing as a wonderful experience. I mean, I'm getting to play with some of my favorite players. Getting to share this musical experience with these fantastic musicians, and I just want to work with everybody I possibly can, everybody that I admire. You know, I've always been a collaborator in the songwriting aspect. You know, I've worked with a number of different people over the years writing songs, and I love that. You know, I'm good at it, and I enjoy it, and I just want to keep working with as many people as I possibly can.
And I gotta say, you know, Simon, he's a really underrated drummer. You know, for years he, of course, was in AC/DC, and he was Ronnie James Dio's right-hand man in Dio, and then another one of the guys that you recently had come out, Brian Titian, play with you. I had a chance to interview him, and he was telling me, you know, he says that he was looking very forward to coming out and doing the shows with you. He says, because he says, I got to tell you, man, he says, this Queensryche music, he goes, not just anybody can play. You got to really be a musician who's got your chops up. So I think, you know, also that shows, by having all these different people come out, it shows you the caliber of musician that has to be able to, you know, play the material.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely, exactly. A lot of guys, when they listen to Queensryche stuff, they go, oh, yeah, I got that, you know. And then they start playing it, and they realize, oh, wait a minute, this is a lot more difficult than it seems. And that's the beauty of the music, is we wrote it with all these subtleties to it, you know, that aren't apparent on first or second listen, that you start realizing as you play it that, you know, these time signatures changes happen. These radical time changes happen, key changes, very interesting voicings of chords, and all these things are—they're not like standard rock music.
Yeah,
you know, it's very intricate stuff, and so yeah, it takes a certain level of musician to be able to understand it and play it. You know, and I got to say, Simon came in and just nailed the stuff, and he gave it his own interpretation, of course, you know, keeping the framework of the song. And same with Brian. Brian came in, and he's just really, really impressed me, because I never had played with him before. You know, I'd played with Simon before, jammed with him, and but Brian I had never played with before, so this was a real cool experience, and I have to say he came in really knowing the stuff.
Yeah, I mean,
and came very prepared and just impressed everybody with his precision, you know, and his leadership, because it's the drummer that really sets the pace and the tone and the timing of the song, right, in a live setting. And for me, this is an extra double, triple treat playing this music live for the first time, because, you know, in the past, Queensryche always relied on a computer or a click track to keep us in time.
Okay.
And, you know, we had all the, you know, background vocals from the albums that I had performed, flown in. And so, you know, because it's really difficult to sing my stuff.
Yeah.
So, you know, this would make for the front of house sound, you know, to sound incredible. You know, I mean, from the audience standpoint, that the song sounds just like the record.
Yeah.
But the downside of that is everything sounds very mechanized. And there's no improvisation. There's no push and pull. Everybody's just playing along to a machine, going dip, 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 you know. So now I'm really enjoying this live aspect, because, you know, I can turn around to Simon or Brian and throw up a hand, and we stop the song right where we're at, and I'll say something to the audience, and then we'll pick it right back up again. You know, it's very improvisational. We can extend solos out. We can extend vocal parts out into, you know, double the section, or whatever we want to do on the fly, you know. And Queensryche could never do that in the past, you know, without pre-production time.
you know,
editing the click track so that we could put in a section right there, you know. You just couldn't do it live.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, each has its own, I suppose. You know, each has its own strong points, but after 30 years of doing it that way, you know, I'm really enjoying doing it this new way.
Yeah, I gotta tell people, you know, Brian Tishy, such an over-the-top drummer. If anybody wants to really check him out, they just put out a Whitesnake Live in Japan DVD. It was one of the last things he did with them. And just check out his drum solo on that video. He was beating his drums with, like, chopsticks and knives and all kinds of crazy things. I mean, he's just such an over-the-top guy.
He's quite a showman.
Yeah.
Quite a showman, yeah.
And I want to talk a little bit to Jeff about, you know, this is the 25th anniversary of Operation Mindcrime. Can you believe it's been that long?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that one more time?
Well, I say, can you believe it's been 25 years? It's the 25th anniversary of Operation Mindcrime. I mean, are you...
I know it's gone by, like, so fast, I can't believe it.
Are you amazed it's, you know, it's had the impact it's had?
Well, you know, time marches on.
Yeah.
And, you know, for me, it just seemed like yesterday, you know, that that album came out. And one of the things that's kind of cool about that record, I think, is that it's when, you know, Mind Crime was written in, and the spirit of the album, you know, is that. It's an album about change. So I think it's very timely and very relative in today's world.
Yeah, and I got to ask you, Jeff, you know, on that original Mind Crime tour, you guys had a backup singer named Tama Lamore, and she's of course gone on to you know, become a successful solo artist. I'm curious if you've had a chance to listen to any of her recent albums and what your thoughts are on it.
On Pamela's stuff?
Yeah, I mean she just put out a new album. It's really full blown.
Oh, I haven't heard that. I haven't heard that yet.
Yeah,
check it out.
Yeah,
she's a great singer.
And
she was
telling me like if she'd never you know, hooked up with you guys, that she probably wouldn't even be doing, you know, be making these records, and she said, I owe it all to them. And so I'd like to ask also, have you been in touch any with Chris DeGarmo, the original guitar player, the last few years?
Yeah, I talked to him pretty regularly. It was his birthday a couple days ago. I talked to him, wished him happy birthday. Yeah.
Okay, and another one I want to ask you about was, you have K.K. Downing on the album. What was it like to work with him? Did he actually come over and with you in the studio?
K.K. was fantastic. Yeah, what an artist that guy is. You know, I've known him for years and years, and you know, we've talked about, you know, doing projects together, but never been able to. And so this was the first time that we ever got to really work in a creative, you know, environment. And I was just so impressed with him. You know, he really takes his art seriously, and you know, spends the time to get things just right. You know, he's very particular about his guitar sound and you know, how he wanted it, you know, in the song and presented in the song. And I really respect people that have that kind of ethic, you know, to their way of doing things. They have an ethical outlook, you know, and I just have nothing but respect for Ken. He's just a consummate musician.
And so let me ask you, was he actually, as you were cutting the tracks, were all these other guys in the studio with you, or did each guy come and kind of record their parts separately?
Some of them came in together in groups, and some recorded separately. Yeah, it just depended on everybody's schedule, you know.
Okay, well, yeah, that's really great. And I could talk to you all day, Jeff, but kind of the last thing I want to talk to you about is years ago, you know, when Rob Halford put out his first Halford solo album, there was a track called The One You Love to Hate, which featured him, Bruce Dickinson, and you. What do you remember from recording that track? I remember after you guys recorded it that there was some talk that you might even do an album together. Do you remember that?
I wasn't involved with the recording of the song. I did a live show with them, both those gentlemen, once.
Okay.
I think it was in London several years ago.
Okay.
And we did the song live.
Okay.
Live, which was really fun.
And so pretty much you're just promoting this new album, and you're currently touring behind it. And are there any plans for like a live DVD or anything down the line, or is that something?
Yeah, we're talking about it.
Yeah,
we've been talking about it. We've got, we're booked all the way up into the fall, so we're just hitting everywhere we possibly can and having a great time, you know, celebrating the 25th anniversary of Mind Crime and, you know, promoting the new record as well. So it's a great tour. I'm very happy with it and very pleased with the wonderful attendance at all the shows and the enthusiasm that people have for the band is just over the top. I've never seen it like this. You know, even back in you know, late 80s and early 90s, I haven't seen people react, you know, to the music like they are now. You know, since then, so it's a wonderful place to be, and I'm very happy to be here.
So let me ask you the last thing I'd like to ask you in terms of a lawsuit, which is that'll be decided, you said, in November. Let's say whoever it comes in favor, like if it comes in your favor and you're allowed to keep the name with the other group, then because their album will be released by then, would they have to change the name of their of what's on the album? Would they have to re-release that, or do you know how that would work?
I don't know how that's all going to work out yet. That's something that we'll have to, you know, come to a decision on when the court date happens, I think.
And is your lawyer, the judge, or anybody giving you any idea, like, how does this get decided? Is it a matter? Is it just a matter of, well, there's more of them than there is you, or who actually started the band? Any idea how the judge makes his decision?
It's a simple formula. You know, it's a corporate dispute, and corporate disputes are regulated by the state and the federal government, and there's a standard that's been, you know, established over years and years of court cases, and it's just kind of paint by numbers, man. You know, it's, yeah. It all comes down to them compensating me or me compensating them. So, simple as that.
Yeah, it's sad this coming, you know, you guys aren't the first band to go through this, but like there's another band, LA Guns, that went through this for like over 10 years, but you won't have to wait that long, of course. But do you worry about when they start touring about people being like fans being confused which band it is, or you don't think that'll be a problem?
You know, I think come November nothing will be problematic anymore. I think it's all going to be finished up by then.
Okay, well, Jeff, once again, I'd like to thank you for taking time to do this. I really appreciate it. And
my pleasure, Jason.
And like I said, myself, I've been a longtime fan of yours, and I think if anybody gives your album a fair listen, it's very Queensryche-ish, you know, sounding. I don't think they'll be disappointed, but they have to just give it a fair listen. You know, don't necessarily listen, believe everything you read on the internet. Because again, you know, you're the voice, and it sounds just like classic Queensryche to me.
Okay,
thanks again, my friend.
Okay, excellent.
Take care. Thank you. Thanks again, Jeff. Bye-bye.
All right. Take care, man.
Okay, bye.